Start of interview with Hector Abhayawardena, 2nd of April 1967.
Now, personally, what events and books and forces led you into radical politics?
Well, I would say that looking into my motivation, apart from the impact of events and books on me, what drove me into politics was fundamentally correcting my personality. An inability to belong to the Western cultural milieu. And yet the lack of any identity with the society that obtained in Ceylon.
What economic class bracket?
Lower middle class. But, as you know, the lower middle class in Ceylon is really of two kinds. The one which still has its roots in traditional society, and the other which is completely swamped by Westernism. Now, I belong to this Westernized lower middle class, which had more or less severed all links with traditional society.
And how proficient were you in Sinhali then?
Well, not proficient at all. So I went to a place like St. Thomas's, which encouraged a certain ridicule of Sinhali rather than any learning of Sinhali person.
Personally, I was educated in Goa, so I never.
I think you are lucky that you educated in Goa, because I can't imagine a more unreal environment than that of a school like St. Thomas's Goa.
So then you would analyze your drift towards the radicalism in terms of reaction against it?
Yes. A consciousness that I did not belong anywhere. No, I was born in a Christian family, and perhaps this was one factor which led to a certain deep feeling of religiosity or religiousness. But by the time I was 16, I had more or less rejected the Christian background and turned anti-theist. So this had to lead me somewhere. Well, I had to find some means of anchoring myself. The alternative would have been what happened to so many of those who went through the English honors course in the old university college. Complete emotional collapse. Fortunately, I think we did enjoy one advantage at St. Thomas's, at least at the time that I was there. We had this man, Heasel.
Yes.
Who didn't appear to understand some of the problems of the colonial environment. And he did appreciate the cultural inheritance of Ceylon. Now he found that we, with the education and schooling we had, did not appreciate that fact. And therefore in the senior and the post-senior forms, he attempted to encourage us to discover our own historical background. I think this was one factor that helped us towards some kind of critical approach to the British society in Ceylon, or British setup in Ceylon, and led us into some kind of political approach.
And what led you into the leftist camp, if I may?
I would say two things. One, the deep impression of the events in Spain at that time. Even before I had come to the university, college, I think, I had begun to be interested in some of the things that were happening abroad. And one of the things that moved me very much was the Spanish Civil War. This led me to join the Left Book Club. And I began, therefore, reading the popular punk literature that came out from the Poland, Lusky, Trechy, Trinity. And this provided me with a gateway to Marx.
So it was Marx as much as Lenin's work which...
Well, I would say it was Marx. But again here, it would not be correct if I spoke in terms of the works of Marx as distinct from the works of Lenin. Because what moved me was the standpoint of Marxism. In other words, it was a fundamentally emotional approach. Some point from which it was possible to appreciate critically contemporary events. And therefore, it's a study of Marxism not to discover principles, but to find in Marxism a means of understanding what was happening outside. So I used Marxism as a crutch, more or less.
Analytical tool?
Yes, an analytical tool more than anything.
And then how come that, I mean, how come the gravitation towards Trotskyite interpretations rather than that proposed by the Communist Party?
In my own case, I would say that it was accidental. I remember I was saturated with Left Book Club literature that was telling it stuff. So when the war broke out, I remember, in 1939, it was not possible for us to differentiate between the Soviet Union stand in the war and that of others. But as events matured,
others being,
say, the those who did not officially identify themselves with the Soviet Union, like the LSSP at that time. Now, the LSSP, as you know, had not, by 1939, taken a very clear Trotskyist stand. It was only after 1939, especially with the attack on the Soviet Union by the German army, that they decided that the only correct stand was that of Trotsky as opposed to international. So I was largely in this vague situation in which one did not differentiate clearly between a critical approach to the Soviet Union and an approach of idealization of the Soviet Union. But there was a friend of mine who apparently had already come under the impact of Trotskyist thinking in Ceylon. He was a colleague of mine who really was not interested in politics or involved in politics in the way that I was. And he was critical of my Popular Front ideas. He asked me to read a book of Trotsky, The Revolution Betrayed. And well, that was my introduction to Trotsky.
Is it out of place to ask the name on the train?
Yes. He was a chap called S.M. Jayaratnam, who did mathematics, was a very good mathematics scholar. I don't know what happened to him after that. I think he joined the income tax department.
Subsequently, now in more recent years, have you been able to read Mao's work?
Well, I must say, I have not made any study of Mao's work. That is partly because I do not believe in that approach to the study of political ideas. I believe that there is a very deep irrational element in politics. Mm-hmm. In other words, that many political attitudes are somewhat unconsciously motivated. And that what one writes is quite often a rationalization of what one feels or what one perceives one's interest to be. So it does help to study political writing in order to discover the consistencies or inconsistencies and the identification. But to study with the aim of discovering new principles and so on and so on, I'm rather skeptical about it.
Mm-hmm. And now in 39, I mean, this is very, well, not very before, but this is just before the big split in Ceylon.
Yes.
Who would you say were the leading members of the LNSP?
So the leader was Philip. There was no question of it. And everybody tended to look on him as the leader. We used to jokingly call him the fooler, in fact.
Did he like that?
I think that he didn't dislike it. That was his frame of mind. You know? But of course, Philip, again, was not an intellectual. So his leadership was the leadership of a Marx leader. The intellectual leadership was provided by Leslie, who had made a study of Trotskyism and Stalinism, and was therefore in a position to teach.
But hadn't Philip, or this is before your time, but come back here as a convinced Trotskyite, because it would appear that he had been expelled from the London British Communist Party?
Yes, he had. But Philip's Trotskyism was really an oppositional attitude. An oppositional attitude to Stalinism and to the Communist Party. In that sense, it was a negative kind of politics. And this accounts for the rapidity with which he could make transitions.
Do you think he tends to be subjective in his view?
He is highly subjective. Mm-hmm.
Now, and would you say that Leslie had been a convinced Trotskyite throughout? I mean, even in the early 30s, as far as you know.
As far as I know, he had. In fact, Leslie is really the type of devout Marxist, the person who discovered a creed in Marxism. And the creed has a very literal shape and meaning for it. He therefore had clear in his mind the verbalization of Trotsky and Lenin and Marx and so on in a way that few others had.
Creed, does it mean that it's an opium?
No. By a creed I would mean a literal manifestation of a perceived or unperceived emotional need. He was looking for something, he needed something. And vaguely, he knew what he required. Again, I think that the nature of what he required would be very similar to what I experienced, deriving fundamentals from the conflict in the cultural situation. But Leslie needed, in a more precise way than I needed perhaps, a formulation or a set of formulae summing up an attitude or an approach, which I think he discovered most satisfyingly in Sanskrit.
Yeah, this is very interesting because there has been a view put forward by others that is split. Was a rationalization of other factors, and that many of the Trotskyites of the 39-40 were only recent Trotskyites and not having been Trotskyites in 35-36. Mm. But I tended to be critical of that because I knew that Philip had been
expelled from the Communist Party. But if you really study the circumstances of Philip's expulsion, I think you will find that it derives from two factors. One, the difficulty of Philip working within any kind of organized setup without clashing with it. And two, the fact that Philip belonged to a colonial nature and could not therefore be expected to swallow every formulation of the Stalinist leadership in business.
But how do you explain his ability to survive 2 years in the UN?
Well, I think he's old now. And one needs a certain optimism about the future to break away from where one stands in the present. I don't think he has that anymore. He believes that he has done what he could have done in his life.
What was Dr. S.A.'s stand in 39 when you entered the party?
Well, S.A. Vikramasinghe had gone to England after he lost his state council seat, and he had come under the influence of the British government. And he is far less of an intellectual than any of the other LSSP leaders. He therefore, I think, found a great ability to fit in to what was the setup in the communist movement at that time. And he idealized the Soviet Union, Stalin, Harry Pollock, and Pavlov, and the whole crowd of them.
So really, he's a late communist. In 35-36, he was not a communist in the sense that he is now, but more of a left book socialist.
I think so. Because although I think he had communist connections, and his wife Doreen, I think she was from the first president of the Suryamal movement.
Yes. But was she CP
at that time? She wasn't CP, I think. Mm. It was later that they really became CP. Mm. Because the LSSP at that time was indefinable. No? Mm. It was really Popular Front, anti-imperialist, socialist. Could have been converted into a CP, or it could have gone the other way. Mm.
But didn't it include a hardcore of Trotskyites in Leslie and
yes, CP? And they worked as a group within the LSSP. Mm-hmm. They call it the T, as you know, perhaps.
The T?
Yes.
Stand for what?
For Trotsky.
Oh, I see. So that term had come into use even before you joined?
Yes, even before I joined. But of course, we were unaware of it.
Mm-hmm. And what was Vernon's role? Vernon's message?
Vernon was the great bohemian who was a very charming person and a person of exceptional gifts.
He was
speaking, writing, conversation, and therefore he had perhaps a greater showmanship, especially in middle class circles than most others.
Oh, I didn't know this. This is very interesting.
Oh, yes. He was a very interesting writer and conversationalist.
Was he your main writer or was Leslie there?
Well, I would say as the articulator of party attitude, it was her. Because he could write much more interestingly and I would say even accurately than Lindsay.
I was interested in the showmanship aspect because I mean, he's not known today.
Yes.
And if he was a showman, why wasn't he put forward to center stage?
Because his appeal was essentially to the English educator. He had absolutely nothing in common with the Marshals. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually had a contempt for them. So he could not survive a period that outgrew the flirtation with the middle classes.
Yes, but say in 36, he was never put forward as candidate when they were flirting with the middle class.
Yes, but you will remember that in those days, the people who really came forward were those who had some roots in the local society.
Trad roots.
Now, Vernon had none, he was utterly rootless.
I'm surprised you giving him this place because I looked up the electricity history.
Yes.
And it was noticeable that his name is there only once. So he was party secretary for 4 years.
Yes.
And I assume this is because that's the party subject was there.
And also, you know, it was not a very happy memory that of Vernon. Because he was utterly dissolute. And yes, he was very utterly dissolute.
In what sense?
Sexually. I would say he was not dishonest, but temptress to the core, and therefore if he had money, he would spend anybody's money. So he didn't bring very high prestige to the party, except among those who admired his abilities and talent.
Yes, I think he had some quite a number of affairs. Didn't he call him to the Carlela?
That's right,
yes. Surprised that he was made secretary because it implies some sort of lack of method, which is actually
yes. In fact, I think one of the weaknesses of the LSSP all along has been a certain organizational light-mindedness. It has not recognized the necessity of a professional core in the party. And a professional core which has, by reason of the officers it holds moral authority in the party. The result was that there tended to be a divorce between the real leaders of the party, the mass leaders, and the organizers of the party or the functionaries. The latter played second fiddle to the leaders. They were considered people who had to implement decisions that were taken elsewhere, rather than as people who made the decisions also.
I thought Leslie and NM and later Bernard and others transcended this. They were both decision makers and functionally.
Yes, but I would say only at certain periods and particularly after a certain period. In the early years, the president was Colvin. Now, Colvin was fundamentally a lawyer. And it was not until the war years, in which period he was compelled to take politics seriously, that his real talents were discovered. His talents as a politician. Now, Colvin, therefore, was made president of the party because of his flowery eloquence. And the it is characteristic of that phase of the party's existence that the presidentship was identified with platform speaking. It had no authority of its own. Similarly, the secretaries were Vernon Gunasekara and somebody else, Jack Kotalawala.
One of the
No. Jack was not a platform speaker. Vernon was a platform speaker, but of any significance only to middle class platforms or middle class audience. Now, these people were secretaries, although it was obvious, one, they were lawyers themselves, or Jack was still a law student, I believe. And Vernon really enjoyed in politics rather than took it as a life pleasure.
Yes, but what was Vernon sent to England for? Just before you were...
Yes, Vernon was sent to England, I think, as part of his education. He was sent to England because they thought that he would benefit from it, to go abroad and meet the other Trotskyists, and showing already a certain preference for the abstract function. They thought that if he went to England, he could blossom out as a theoretician and so on.
Wasn't he also asked to collect funds?
In England? I'm not sure of that. I don't think. Because the party didn't get any funds from abroad.
It is like from where did the party finance?
The party financed itself on the contributions of its members.
Did a lot come from the Borough Liberal? I mean,
Philip and Robert? Not in the sense of large contributions to the party. But Robert was an extremely self-sacrificing person. And even though his contribution to Central Party Fund may have been a few hundred rupees a month, he would spend 10 times as much on party work without making the party realize that he in fact was contributing all this.
Wasn't Philip also like that?
Philip also was generous, but he had the money for that, because he had, I think, exhausted a good part of his means abroad. But I think the person who contributed most systematically to the sustenance of the party was Lenin.
Was his family better off than the Philip's family?
Oh, yes. He was very much better off than any of the others.
Now is not particularly...
No, but that is typical of him. He was always modest. And never ostentatious. In fact, he set himself a certain regimen to which he adhered throughout his life. He shows many characteristics of the religious leader.
What you said earlier. And what about
Harold Pinis? Yes, Harold Pinis also did contribute quite a lot, I think, in the early days. But then by 1940, I think he had begun to estrange himself from the party, because he was an admirer of the Soviet Union and of the Stalin
regime. Did the party, as I said, include lots of people who were really liberals rather than socialists?
Well, I would say, yes, that until the illegal period began, the party following largely derived from the liberal middle class. And this tended to reflect a strong liberal streak in its dominant leadership.
In fact, what was the the How did they bring you into the party? I mean, I presume they checked up and gave you a
probationary course. I found my entry to the party in the university under the general influence of Mr. Edmund Wickramasinghe.
Yes.
Edmund was then, I think, one of the principal recruiters for the university. And of course, as the university was at that time, people were not easily admitted. We had to attend study groups, then go through a period of apprenticeship candidacy.
And what were you asked to do during that period?
Well, at the time that I came in, they were already beginning to organize the secret wing of the party.
Under
Garrick.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there someone else, sir?
Bernard was also there.
Yes.
Bernard was also there, and Tony Anthony was there.
Why were they anticipating a war?
Yes. They were making provision for the war period.
In fact, in the war period, would it be correct to say that they had a secret organization and an open organization, which, because some of the years became really an open rough, if you might have mentioned that?
Yes, that is true. In fact, the secret organization became the nucleus of the Party of the Future. Those who belonged to the open organization, many of them, either found their way out or clashed with the real leadership of the party, or just dropped out.
So, into which section were you put, and secret wing or the...
I was always in the underground wing.
On what basis did they...
Because they needed, the type of person that the young university student was to act as the functionary in the underground.
And Edmund?
Edmund was also in the underground, but of course he was very widely known. I don't know how he functioned in the underground.
I mean, he continued to function after the war, didn't he?
Not so much after the war, I think. During the war, I think he had begun his gravitation away.
Yeah, but how would you explain his gravitation?
Well, I would say that the basis of it again is in Edmund's personality. Mm-hmm. Edmund was bourgeois. Mm-hmm. He was completely westernized. And being both bourgeois and westernized, it was very difficult for him to effect a transition to, a marked type of function, where you would have not merely to develop new cultural attributes, but you would also have to forego some of the material necessities or what you have been accustomed to consider as necessities. Now, I think Edmund was always one who enjoyed popularity. And even his Marxism was, if you like the perverse form of the search for popularity among his contemporaries. It perhaps fastened his personality on people in a more enduring way, or what appeared to be a more enduring way than the usual form of social affability.
And what was in the 39-40 period before the war, what was your attitude to Singhala Mahasabha?
Actually, we didn't take the Singhala Mahasabha very seriously in that period. Because, so far as I know, the Singhala Mahasabha became a force only after the break with the UNP. Guna Singha was more potent repository of communalism to a party like the LSSP than the Singhala Mahasabha. Because Gunasinghe's injection of communal attitudes took place among the working class, in which social layer we ourselves were fighting to establish the influence of the LSSP.
One question that struck me recently is that now NMP is so close related to the LSSP today that we tend to project his name back and think of him as a leading light. Whereas I suspect that in the 30s he was not all that important a figure.
No, he wasn't. In fact, until his break with Philip in 1950, Ellen was really a disciple of Philip. His importance derived from the confidence that Philip reposed in him. And one might say his capacity for hard work, his self-discipline, he was capable of discipline function. If he was a treasury, he functioned as a treasurer. And the fact that he was the only leader who, besides Philip and Leslie, who was a full-timer, he was a professional. He didn't have any other occupation.
Yes.
And he was a professional in the trade union movement, which Leslie was not.
Well, yeah,
Leslie was always the party organizer.
So you had, they had delineated and specialized roles?
Yes, they specialized roles. And Enim's mass following was one in the trade union movement. He was, as you know, the president of the CF of Wales.
Mm-hmm. But hasn't Enim already sought a government job? He's sitting quite square with...
Yes. The government job in the sense that he wanted to be a lecturer in the university college. I don't know of any other government job that he looked for. Again, I would say this is also typical of the man. Elam is a person who fits into a routine. And since he could not find a government routine or a bureaucratic routine, he readily merged himself in the routine of agitation and trade union activities. And once he had got in there, well, then he went on logically. But I don't think that he had the same problems of conflict, intellectual or emotional, that most of the other leaders had. And in that sense, he hasn't the same drive, or the same political drive, that Philip or Leslie had.
Well,
the
platform speaker, how was he then?
Well, I would say he was very drab as a platform speaker. His value as a platform speaker derived from his membership in Parliament and his great acquaintance with everyday matters, the price index, his fondness for detail generally, so that he could explain to the masses what they were interested in.
So, in 1940, Philip and Leslie and even Colvin would really rate above NM in the within the party.
I would think so. In fact, NM was not taken very seriously as the definer of policy. And I don't think he ever attempted to assert himself in that role. Mm-hmm. It is only very recently that he has appeared as a the protagonist of approaches or ideas or policies.
He was a Philip's emotional conflict, but as you had mentioned it before, how do you analyze him?
I would say that Philip is the nearest approach we had in the LSSP to a person with genuine charisma. There was no doubt but that there was a bug biting him. Now, I do not know what the nature of that conflict was, what kind of bug was biting him. But I feel it derived one from his family background.
As a feudal background?
A feudal background. And a feudal background in which his father once projected as a leader of some kind of traditional revolt against the British. Now this must have had a strong impact on him. And the personality of their father is stamped, I think, on most of the children in that family. All of them.
Yes, but not only did he have leading a revolt against the British and Philip,
yes,
he's also leading a reaction against the very system which held his father in place.
Yes, but that derived from the period of incubation of his politics, really, which took place in his studentship abroad. Now there, his identifications must have been formed with the rebel or oppositional elements within the United States, American society, or British society. And as you know, so many of our colonial students who went to Britain found an easy identification with the labor movement or the communist movement. Even if that had no very decisive impact on their particular personality when they returned home. So, Philip being a political kind of personality, having received this education abroad, naturally had to take it forward once he returned. He could easily discard that and go back to a program of identification with the upper classes. There is one factor here, there is another factor, and this is where I think the importance of the traditional element comes in, his Buddhistic background. It was a singular Buddhistic background, and one which was not absorbed in the cosmopolitan environment of Ceylon middle class society at that time. There was money in his father's family, perhaps, or there was land, but there was not European or Western culture.
Regarding the strata from which the NSSP membership at the time was drawn, and membership itself, was there a difference between the sort of the, let's say, the leadership membership and the general youth league membership? I mean, were there different standards of entry?
Of entry?
In the sense that, now you said you had to go through a sort of probationary period, right?
Yes, yes.
Obviously you could...
I see what you mean, yes. The emphasis was on what we called the recruitment of the worker. And whereas the worker was permitted many things, the petit bourgeois was not. So we had more rigorous standards.
Now you say that any worker who came forward and said he wanted to join would be allowed in, whereas...
No, he wouldn't be allowed in.
Okay.
He also had to go through the process of education. He had to go through the study classes, mm-hmm. and he was tested about his programmatic maturity. And he had to show himself activist. It was only then that he would be
admitted. Oh, I see. But isn't it this is cause for paramount organization to keep an eye on this.
Yes, indeed. But without it also, it wouldn't have been possible to tide over the period of the war years. Because the police were infiltrating our organization.
Oh, they were, yes. And were you able to weed them out?
Well, sometimes it was sheer luck that saved them. We knew only later that somebody was a police agent.
What do you say about the theory that Derek is one?
That is the rationality of Philip
Subjectiveness.
And this again is a peculiar element in politics, you know, that very trivial incidents have very large consequences.
Trivial?
Very trivial incidents. I think that this all derives from some little incident that his wife reported to Philip. And
you can't recall what?
I can't recall what, but I think it derived from something that happened on their way to jail to visit Philip or something.